We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is Leprechaun Lunch with Sean Stiers and Jim Irizarry on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
Well, how are we doing today? Hope you're having a good Black Friday, Thanksgiving weekend, whatever you want to call it. Along with Jimmy Irizarry, I'm Sean Stiers. It is the Leprechaun Lunch presented by First State Bank, the only community bank headquartered in Elkhart County. First State Bank offers the highest quality products and services. Well, how was your turkey yesterday, Jim?
Came out awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. The skin was, I'll admit this, the skin wound up getting a touch on the salty side. Because in addition to butter, you know, I also put, you know, salt, pepper, garlic in there, you know, into the into the butter, stirred that around, and also put a like a barbecue seasoning in there as well, like a little bit of that.
Wow,
just like a little
got
bit.
Fancy, huh?
Yeah, a little. Now, yeah, real fancy. A couple of containers from Costco.
But, now, if I remember right, you smoked your turkey. Is
yes.
that right? You smoked yours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Did,
see, mine when I've tried to smoke turkey or any birds, really, the our skin always comes out really leathery. It's like you can't even eat the skin on ones that I've tried to smoke. So
it
sounds like yours came out a little bit different.
It came, like really, really salty, like kind of overpoweringly salty on the skin.
Okay.
But the meat was fantastic. So who gives a damn about the skin at that point?
That's what matters.
That's right.
That's exactly
so,
right.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it without the skin, obviously. But
yeah.
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 So, it's the bird that matters.
It came out really good. It took about, how long did it take? It took about 6 hours.
Okay.
So.
Not necessarily really slow and low, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, 40 minutes a pound at 225. is what I cooked it at, and 225 right in that ballpark. My smoker stayed right there at 225 too. Sometimes it, you know, just likes to fluctuate a whole lot as far as temperature goes, you know, especially towards the hotter side of things. But yeah, came out great. So I was really happy.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm in Daytona, as you know, I'm in Daytona Beach, Florida.
Yeah, Notre how's
Daytona's
that going?
Basketball and. Well, from what I understand, it's looking a lot nicer here, as you can imagine, than it is in South Bend right now.
Shocker.
With
yeah.
snow on the ground. Yeah, yeah, that's not very shocking.
Yeah,
but,
just a little dusting.
Sunny in 70s and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's looking pretty good. And so I've been here for a few days, and they finally play tonight, or this afternoon, I guess, technically.
Right.
Georgia today. And Oregon State tomorrow, a couple of ranked teams. Georgia is number 21 in the coaches poll, not ranked in the AP. Oregon, 16th in the AP, Oregon State, rather, excuse me, 16th in the AP, 19th in the coaches poll. Hmm. There won't be any television for this game. They are doing, you know, some kind of subscription streaming service, so it's not going to be a TV-accessible game. So if you're in the South Bend market, 99.9 FM is the way to go today and tomorrow. We'll have the game against Georgia today. And there are like, there are eight different teams here. Michigan's down here. Marquette is down here. Illinois is down here. Middle Tennessee State, Mississippi State. And it's not a tournament. It's just like a everybody gets two games kind of thing, you know, predetermined.
Okay.
Two games.
It's not like the Maui Invitational where it's being played
No.
It's not being played at midnight.
Well, speaking of which, hopefully the schedule runs on time tomorrow because Notre Dame does have the late game at 7 o'clock tomorrow. And that's, you know, that's the one thing. It's like they give you all the times and all that stuff. And do the games actually run on time? And so that could be tricky tomorrow with the Irish playing the last game. But we'll see. But couple of really good, Matt, you know, this is, I think for both Notre Dame and their opponents, this is going to be the first real test. They're all unbeaten. Georgia hasn't lost yet. Notre Dame hasn't lost yet. Oregon State hasn't lost yet. Oregon State really has not played anybody at all. They've even played a Division II school as part of their schedule. So
awesome.
Yeah, but they're ranked the highest, you know, right, of everybody. So, you know, it should be a couple of really good tests. Notre Dame sitting at 5-0 heading into tonight's game against Georgia. So looking forward to that. And, again, I'll have the call over on 99.9 FM. Did you get your fill of bad football yesterday?
Oh, man, overdosed. Holy cow. Whoa.
Oy vey.
I mean, I guess, okay, you're the Cowboys fan. Obviously, you're thinking, yeah, you know, you're saying, you know, the loss was bad. Game was pretty good, though, you know, from,
well,
you know, overall, anyway.
What was,
at least
what
it was
bad about it?
Yeah.
And I'm not, I'm not just complaining because so many flags were thrown on Dallas, especially in crucial situations on third down. And,
yeah,
you know, the last one is the most obvious in overtime, but 30 total flags were thrown in that game.
Ugh.
30. 28 were accepted. You know, two were declined, so 28 penalties were accepted. That's between the two teams.
Yeah.
So the first quarter took almost an hour to play because there were so many penalties. It was just like, if you're the NFL and you're an officiating crew, is this, you know, really what you think the biggest audience of the year so far has tuned in to see? Like, Jerry Jones was talking about it afterwards. After the Super Bowl, that game between Dallas and the Raiders yesterday is probably going to be the second most viewed game of the season because
probably,
it's Thanksgiving Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, again, like I was looking at some numbers, even the Lions, as much as we complain about how bad the Lions are in their 0-10-1 now.
Yeah.
And, you know, that game is still going to get around 24, 25 million people watching. That is a huge number,
mm-hmm,
you know, by today's TV metrics.
That's bigger than, like, any of the playoff games, too, which are also,
yeah,
you know, like, in these exclusive windows. So
I guess if you're going to, you know, if you're a casual fan and you tune in and you watch that game, it's like, well, at least it was a close game. It ends up going overtime, yada, yada, yada,
yeah,
all that stuff. So maybe you don't care about 30 flags on the field. But it's as someone who's, you know, and I said this, remember, in my five, I had some thoughts, you know, going into the Thanksgiving weekend. I'm tired of both the Cowboys and the Lions on Thanksgiving Day. As a Cowboys fan, it's like, why do I need to sit here and have my Thanksgiving ruined, you know, watching something like that? But I don't know. You know, it's, you know, so they've lost 3 of 4 now, and they've lost them to AFC West teams, the Broncos, the Chiefs, and now the Raiders. You know, so they've lost to basically – they did beat the Chargers somehow, the team that over the course of this season has been probably the best team in the AFC West.
Most consistent one,
but
anyway, yeah.
Yeah, most consistent anyway, yeah, but that's who they beat. But that, to me, it's like that's how that's what the NFL is this year, because, like, even,
yeah,
you know, Buffalo loses that game getting throttled by the Colts last week, and then they turn around
and beat up on the Saints.
And throttle the Saints. Now, you know, again, like, I don't know, especially without Jameis Winston, how good the Saints are, and they don't have, you know, any of their running backs. Tony Jones Jr. was actually playing last night, didn't do much. But it was not a great day of NFL yesterday.
Yeah, I had seen better. The tryptophan on the turkey started working for me during the late game. So
you're lucky.
Yeah, I kind of got an early bedtime because of it, so I'm
I
feeling okay.
Over. I watched more Ole Miss Mississippi State Egg Bowl than I did.
Oh, I forgot that was yesterday.
Yeah,
I thought that was going to be today.
I did Saints and Bills and Saints, however you want to look at it. But yeah, so that was last night. Ole Miss wins. I did not even realize Mississippi, by beating their arch rival Mississippi State last night, they're 10-2. That's the first 10-win season in Ole Miss history. That is amazing.
Wow. That's the first one.
Old Brother Lane.
Wow.
Yeah, first one ever. First 10-win season in Ole Miss history. That is just nuts.
Man.
So, of course, we've got Notre Dame at Stanford tomorrow night, 8 o'clock kickoff as the Irish look to close out the regular season and make their final case for the college football playoff. A lot of other games going on tomorrow as well. Of course, Ohio State and Michigan kick off at noon. Are you going to watch that tomorrow?
Ohio State and Michigan?
Yeah.
Or Stanford, Notre Dame? Yeah, probably both.
Well, Ohio State, Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to make
I assume you're going to watch Notre Dame and Stanford at some point.
Somehow, yeah. Yeah. I will watch that game. But
I guess you've got to be locked in the old bunker all day tomorrow, though, don't you?
Not really me all day. I got to show up at like 7. So I can still get a pretty solid day. And then even so, I've got YouTube TV, so I can just watch it on my laptop.
Okay.
But I typically wake up for Michigan and Ohio State, and then
wake up for it at noon.
That's how my Saturdays are.
Well, I envy you because I can't even sleep in on the weekends.
Right. That's how I like my Saturdays anyway. Every so often, but you know, typically like this weekend, you know, this is probably like the first Thanksgiving weekend where I've really worked in quite some time, actually.
So you're really excited about that.
Yeah, sure. It's not terrible. I'll wake up for Michigan, Ohio State, and probably watch that, you know, and you know, until Ohio State makes it like 35-0 in the second quarter and try and find something else. So
all right, so we've got a day of coverage tomorrow, Notre Dame and Stanford leading up to that. And, of course, you know, Notre Dame, the Irish where they are right now, sitting at number 6 behind Michigan, and with Cincinnati at number 4 in the all-important college football playoff standing. Cincinnati and East Carolina play at 3:30 this afternoon. So you can pull for an East Carolina upset. I don't know if you're going to get it, but that's what you can pull for this later on this afternoon. Someone who's not too thrilled at all about Notre Dame in the college football playoff is Keyshawn Johnson, the former USC Trojan. And he's one of these guys who's been sounding off for years about his distaste for Ohio State. You want to go ahead and play the clip, the Keyshawn Johnson clip, as he fires off about Notre Dame? And
sure.
We'll talk about it here in
Absolutely.
A second. All right, go ahead. Here's right. Keyshawn.
I've been watching college football my entire life, okay? But I go back to Oklahoma-Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. What Boise State was able to do to Oklahoma and Bob Stoops. I look at that. I look at what a lightweight Oregon State team did to Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. I like teams like that that are major underdogs in these situations. I don't want to see no damn Notre Dame. I don't want to see that. I know what that's going to be. And yes, I went to USC. And yes, I don't like Notre Dame. But if I went to no college, I don't want to see the damn Irish, period. They do nothing for me. Nothing at all.
Got a national following, though, Key. They really do.
They do nothing. They're not a good football team. I don't want to see that again, another blowout.
So, you know, he's talking about Oregon State. That was literally 21 years ago, the Fiesta Bowl.
Right, I was going to say, I was like, how many coaches like, ago was that? I was like,
yeah, like a handful of guys on, you know, on any roster right now around the country were even born. So, you know, so he's holding a grudge. He's holding a grudge for 21 plus years. And it's just,
But it's got nothing to do with him going to USC.
Nope. There's no bias in there at all. National talk show host, ESPN, Keyshawn Johnson. No bias in that those comments at all. And I think that's the biggest thing. It's, you know, like it's one thing if that's how you feel. You know, like Desmond Howard kind of let some of his old Notre Dame, Michigan stuff slip out every now and then. But I think like he at least attempts some professionalism. You know, like when you hear him talk about Notre Dame, it's like, come on, Keyshawn, can you at least give that a shot?
Right. ESPN has only backed up the dump truck full of money for you. You know, can you at least try on this?
Well, and when he's talking about they're not any good. I mean, look at your alma mater. I mean, that is the definition of not any good right now.
Yes.
It's not even close.
Yeah,
so
it's like if Notre Dame's not any good, then what does Keyshawn think is good? You know, how many teams have been good in Keyshawn's? You know, it's like what?
Well, and
all I know is that I'm glad we went local in the morning. Way back when, I'll say that.
Darren covering up that show.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much.
I'm glad we went local in that slot.
That's a good point because that's the show that we used to air, you know. So, but fortunately, we do not anymore, and I think that we are all better off for it. And you broke my train of thought. I was about to say something there, but I don't.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. You know, again, I think when you go back and you look, like Keyshawn is talking about Notre Dame losing all these bowl games and all that kind of stuff, and I guess that goes back to the conversation about would you rather, you know, go to a playoff game and lose or go to a New Year's Six bowl and win, you know, and that kind of stuff. Well, you know, I guess so like do you – you know, could the program use that kind of game where at least you're in a Fiesta Bowl or a Peach Bowl, you know, a New Year's Six outside the college football playoff where they at least win that game so maybe that kind of conversation ends. So at least you can say you win one. I would still rather go to the playoff and lose.
Sure.
And, again, like when you look at the way recruiting is trending right now, being in those games matter. Even if you don't win, I still think being in those important games, the college football playoff games, do matter.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame is not the only one losing lopsided games in these playoff games. And I think that's kind of what gets covered up in all of this. Because someone tweeted out, you know, like, this is year number 8. This is going to be year number 8 of the college football playoff. And if you go back historically, you know, it's not just Notre Dame who is losing lopsided games, whether it's Alabama or Clemson or whoever, when they're winning these national championships, you know, they have won some lopsided games against other teams as well, you know. So it's like those teams at the top just end up that much better than everybody else.
Right.
So, you know, it's not just Notre Dame. It's just that Notre Dame in two of these last 3 years has unfortunately come up on the short end. And that's something Brian Kelly has pointed out as well. You know, as a head coach, you expect him to, you know, to be upset when you lose a lopsided game like that. But as he has pointed out, it's not just them, but for whatever reason, because they're Notre Dame and everything else, they seem to bear more of the brunt of all that animosity about losing those kind of games than some of these other teams, you know, whether it's Florida State or you know, even Clemson, and you know, they've all lost some lopsided games. So I think it's a little bit slanted conversation, but again, when you've got someone like Keyshawn Johnson who is not afraid to tell you that he's got a dog in the hunt, he went to Notre Dame's biggest rival, you know, he played for USC, and he is not afraid to tell you that he hates Notre Dame, and I don't think that he would hate Notre Dame with as much venom as he hates Notre Dame had he not gone to USC. He can say that the fact that he went to USC doesn't matter, but I think it does. You know,
his bias
obviously comes out pretty thick.
Yeah,
there.
As I'm sitting here, I'm trying to think. You know, I'm trying to think of one of the playoff games where it wasn't a total blowout, and I'm having some trouble. Like, just off the top of my head. I know there have been some close ones, but as far as, like, you know, how many of them have actually been close, you know, like, within 10 to 14 points. You know, like, there have been...
No, you're exactly...
I'm like, what has he been watching, you know, if he doesn't want a blowout?
So here, I'll read you some results from the last few years, okay? Ohio State beat Clemson 49-28 last year.
Okay.
In one of the in the other semifinal. Alabama beat Ohio State 52-24 in the national championship game. This is just last year.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, Notre Dame lost by 17 points to Alabama in one semifinal, but of the three playoff games last year, that was the closest of the three.
Right.
You know, Ohio State beats Clemson by 3 touchdowns, and then Alabama beats Ohio State by 28 points in the national championship game. Okay. In the 2020 semifinal, LSU 63, Oklahoma 28. The other semifinal between Clemson and Ohio State was close, and then LSU beats Clemson by 17 points in the national championship game. Okay, so back in 2019, we know Notre Dame lost 30-3 to Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
The other semifinal between Alabama and Oklahoma, relatively close. But then Clemson in the national championship game beats Alabama 44-16. Again, a 28-point, a 4-touchdown loss. So Clemson didn't just beat Notre Dame
right
by 27. They beat Alabama by 28.
Yeah.
2018, maybe the best college football semifinal ever played, at least most entertaining anyway. Georgia beats Oklahoma 54-48. That was a double overtime game.
Yeah, that was a good
one. Other semifinal, Alabama beats Clemson 24-16. And then the championship game between Alabama and Georgia was actually close. It went to overtime. So that was like, right, 2018, probably one of the best ever, you know, across the board. Semifinal in 2017, Alabama beat Washington by 17 points. Clemson blanked Ohio State 31-0 in the other semifinal.
I forgot that Washington was a playoff team.
Yeah, I know.
That was just 4 years ago.
I know.
Wow.
Anyway. Yeah. Clemson beat Ohio State 31-0. And then in the national championship game, a close one. In 2016, a 20-point win for Clemson over Oklahoma, a 38-point win for Alabama over Michigan State, a close national championship game. And then back in 2015, Oregon just lambastes Florida State 59-20, a close semifinal between Ohio State and Alabama. And then in the national championship game, Ohio State beats Oregon by 22 points. So I think the biggest difference, you know, one, you know, like nobody cares about Oregon, I guess, you know,
yeah,
and Washington and those kind of teams. Michigan State has only been there once. But again, no one's talking about them getting blown out. It's only Notre Dame,
right,
and their lopsided losses, you know, that become part of this conversation. Now, part of that also is like when you're talking about Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State, because each of those teams, even though they've lost some of these lopsided games, they've also won national championships. So it goes,
right,
away,
yeah,
you know, when you win, you know, some of those championships, or at least win a semifinal and get to the national championship game. A lot of that stuff goes away. But it lingers for Notre Dame. One, because Notre Dame is polarizing, and two, because they haven't won one of those games yet, you know. So,
right,
that's part of why it's there. All right, real quick, speaking of Nick Saban, we've got another soundbite from him. This is Nick Saban on his coach's show the other day. He just went off on a tangent. I don't know exactly how it came up, but, you know, the clip has been making the Twitter round. So this is Nick Saban from his coach's show the other day. Have a listen to this.
Played LSU. Everybody says, oh, they lost two games in a row. They're not any good anymore. All right, we're just going to blow them out. It's just the opposite. It's just the opposite of that. All right, they're competitors. They have moms and dads. They have pride in performance. They have things that they want to accomplish and they want to do, and they want to be good. Right, they don't just throw in the towel. Right, they work harder to try to get better. And everybody wants to beat us. Right, so we're going to get everybody's best game. And I don't know why people can't understand that. And you know, we're just, you know, and you know, it's, you could say it's not fair to our players that they get everybody's best game. Right, but they do. Right, and they have to be able to compete through that and play over that. And you know, it's. I don't know. I mean, when I came here, everybody was happy to win a game. All right, now we're not happy to win a game anymore. We're not happy to win a game at all. All right, we think we should win games by whatever. And I don't think that's fair to the players either. All right, because our players work their butt off, all right, to be the best that they can be. and to get criticized for what they work hard for to do so that you can be entertained, so that you can enjoy and have pride and passion for what they accomplish and what they do. And they're not perfect. They're just college students. They're going to they go to school every day. They got to study. They have to run extra after practice when they miss study hall. I mean, come on. Give me a break. This is not professional football. These guys aren't getting paid to play here. They're representing you all. You should be proud and happy to support them and appreciate what they do and have some gratitude. And you know what else? Nobody wants to win worse than they do. Not me, not you. I don't care what kind of fan you are. Nobody wants to win more than the players that play. Nobody.
That was magnificently said.
And nobody feels worse than they do when they lose.
Yep.
Nobody. So for all you self-absorbed folks out there that can't look past your own self, to appreciate what other people are doing.
I mean,
and happy Thanksgiving, you
right.
self-absorbed Alabama fans.
He's not
Nick
wrong.
Nick Saban, I just like the way he says aight.
Aight.
He doesn't say all right, aight. No, I mean, he is not wrong at all. I wish I knew what spurred all this.
I wish I would have heard the question. Yeah.
Yeah. This is on Nick Saban's coach's show, which, you know, like if you see the video for it, they're and like you hear all the clapping and cheering and stuff, you know, there's
like
different levels of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in some kind of restaurant or bar, you know, which it's I mean, and there's some levels of that, you know, that are pretty much go back to what we were just talking about. Just for like Notre Dame, Alabama, Clemson, any of those schools, you know, at some point it all gets taken for granted. Just, you know, like just look at Notre Dame and the fact that they've got five straight double-digit winning seasons now, but it's okay, well, what have you done for me lately? You still haven't won a playoff game. You're still not going to the championship, winning a championship. Because, you know, like a couple months back, a friend of mine came into town. You know, he's a Notre Dame grad and all this stuff, and it's just like, you know, sat down and watched the game, and all he did was complain about Brian Kelly from start to finish. It's like, winning the game.
What
they're
do you
winning
want?
The game we're watching, and you're complaining about Brian Kelly. Okay.
What all more right. do you want here?
That's right.
I wonder if it was Brian Kelly saying that, I wonder how people would be taking it.
Oh man.
They
a
would,
lot differently.
Yeah.
You know, because Nick Saban's got, you know, his 8 million national championships he can fall back on, you
exactly.
know, because he's brought them national championships, and, you know, so he's got all that equity earned up there. But you're absolutely right, you know, and Dabo Swinney can probably say a lot of the same kind of thing. But if you're Brian Kelly, oh my God, I can't even imagine if he went off on that kind of tirade.
Ugh.
It just completely different.
So. Yeah, I'm just. Ugh. What more do you want?
Yes,
I've gone off on tangents like that, and, you know, just kind of rolls off people's backs. But
that's right.
You know.
Well, that's what you know. Like, I remember Roy Williams when he was still at Kansas before he went to North Carolina, where there was a story about how he's walking through the airport. You know, after they had just, I think it was maybe after they had lost to Syracuse in the national championship game, like back in 2003 or something like that. And, you know, some fan comes up to him. He's like, "Oh, you let us down, Roy." And, you know, the comment Roy had was, "What do you have invested in it?" You know, it's like the same kind of thing. It's like as coaches and players, they go through the daily grind, the practice, the work, the film, all, you know, the off-season conditioning and everything else. And, you know, as a fan, it's just your emotion. You know, maybe you buy some tickets or you watch the games or whatever else. I mean, the players and the coaches, I mean, literally, the sweat and the prep and everything else, you know, it's just, yeah. But, like, if you apply that to Brian Kelly, you know, just add that to the list of things that that he could never say.
Just because you own, you know, you may pay for, you know, every year for that little spot on the bench, you know, on the metal bench in the stadium, it doesn't mean that you're out there, you know, with these guys training, you know, for a national championship or, you know, or like you know, like you're getting a ring or anything, or you're even getting a piece of that. You're not.
Right. No, exactly. He's Jim Irizarry. I'm Sean Stiers. It's the Leprechaun Lunch. We are presented by First State Bank in Elkhart, committed to being a premier financial partner. First State Bank demonstrates and delivers hometown values. We've got Notre Dame and Stanford coming up tomorrow night. In just a minute, we're going to let you hear the opposing press box interview with Troy Clarity. We will do that coming up in just a second. I'll remind you, though, that we're also brought to you in part by Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Eric Yetterberg in South Bend or Matt Stem in Osceola. By Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. Ready for your next escape? Experience the excitement at Four Winds Casinos with award-winning cuisine, the latest slots, a variety of game tables, or table games, including live poker. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. Legacy Heating and Air. Visit LegacyHeatingAndAirInc.com. South Bend Orthopedics, team physicians for the University of Notre Dame since 1949. Wings Etc. Grill and Pub, 14 Michiana area locations. Stop in today. Order online at togo.wingsetc.com. We've got, again, Notre Dame and Stanford coming up tomorrow, and we'll let you hear from Troy Clarity coming up next. This is the Leprechaun Lunch, presented by First State Bank on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Leprechaun Lunch, presented by First State Bank, continues on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT in Stanford tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, right here on Sports Radio 960 AM. And let's talk right now with Troy Clarity, who hosts the TreeCast podcast.
Sean, it's great to be with you. And as soon as I hang up the phone with you, I got a bird to put in the smoker. So my day is getting better and better as the minutes go along.
Nice. Smoked turkey. That's the way to go. I love the smoked turkey.
Hard to
Sounds
beat,
good.
Man. Hard to beat.
It is.
Notre Dame's hard to beat, too, this year, it seems.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Troy. When I was looking up a little information this afternoon on Stanford, I read something interesting. That 2018 game back at Notre Dame Stadium, both teams came into the game unbeaten. They were both top 10 teams. The Cardinal at that point had won at least 8 games for 9 straight years. Of course, Notre Dame ended up winning that night. It was Ian Book's first start. Since then, though, Stanford, again, they were 4-0 going into that game. They are just 16-22 since then, and we know that they're 3-8 right now. What has happened over these last 3 years that has led them to this point where they are right now?
Well, it's a funky confluence of things, right? And I think what Stanford fans are unfortunately realizing again is that there are so many things that have to fall just so in order for your favorite team to win one game, much less win 10 during the course of the season and be in chance and be having the chance for big things. And a lot of those things that went right for Stanford during very much of the first half of the decade, even going in and stretching up until around the 2017-2018 season, haven't gone right largely for the Cardinal over the past couple of years in particular. The biggest thing has been health. They have just been decimated by injuries. You go back to 2019 when they barely had enough healthy offensive linemen to field a unit sometimes. Stanford loves to, back when they're at the peak of their intellectual brutality powers, they'd run six, seven, sometimes eight different linemen at you, sometimes even on the same play. They couldn't even come close to doing that in 2019 because they barely had six healthy offensive linemen throughout much of that season. Health and availability has been an issue again for Stanford this year, pretty much everywhere except the offensive line this year. The wide receiver room has been particularly racked. The secondary, inside linebackers are not healthy. The offensive line has stayed healthy, but they've been super ineffective. So health has been one thing. Tough schedule at the start. Even though Stanford went 3-2 in the beginning, that front-loaded schedule may have exacted a heavy price and may have exacted a heavy toll. But as far as this year is concerned, it's been injuries. It's been an inability to run block with any degree of consistency. It's been a complete and total inability to tackle, especially over the last few weeks. And against Washington State, all Stanford needed to do was just get one first down to seal both of those wins. They couldn't do it. It's a lot of things that have conspired against Stanford, particularly in the 2019 and the 2021 seasons.
Yeah, and I mean, this is year 11 now for David Shaw out there, and it's going to be his second losing season in 3 years. And you just detailed a lot of, you know, stuff that covers that stretch. How secure is David Shaw out there right now?
As secure as he wants to be. It's okay. It's really not even worth, you know, going beyond it, but beyond that, he's as secure as he wants to be.
Well, and you know, Stanford was historically a tough place to win consistently prior to Jim Harbaugh showing up, and then obviously Shaw taking over after Harbaugh left for the NFL and obviously ultimately for Michigan, but he left for the 49ers, you know, when he left there. But Shaw led him to 5 double-digit win seasons in 6 years, and I mean, he was a hot commodity. If you gave him truth serum, would he, you know, would he say that he maybe regrets not moving on for greener pastures, or, you know, is he completely happy, do you think, out there still at Stanford right now?
No, I think the fact that, you know, he's a Stanford alum, right? Class of 94,
sure.
Played in the program, you know, knows, you know, had you know, I mean, obviously the early 90s weren't completely take for Stanford, although he was on the field and was part of the program that went to Notre Dame and came away with big wins in South Bend in both 1990 and 1992. So, you know, he goes back a long ways with this program, and he knows, you know, it means something to him, and he knows that Stanford is not like just about any other place in the country where the football coach can pretty much run the campus, right? Which is pretty much the case in a lot of other places around the country. That's not so. He can't, you know, call the admissions office and say, "Hey, slide this kid through, no matter what." It just doesn't work that way. So he knows full well coming in how things work at Stanford because he's been a part of that process himself. So, you know, I don't think that he regrets it. I mean, certainly it's been super challenging. 2020 with the health directives that Santa Clara County issued here that forced the Cardinal to play their final 4 games on the road. They went 4-2, by the way, and won 3 and won all 4 of those games on the road, by the way. I think somehow people seem to forget that. But no, I don't think he regrets making that move, you know, to any extent, to any serious extent, really.
You know, as you kind of referenced there a second ago, they built that program there at Stanford on physicality. It was a different blueprint than most of the conference was playing with. And, you know, you talk about, you know, the offensive linemen and, you know, 13 personnel and all that, you know, that different stuff, you know, basically on bullying teams out there in the Pac-12. If health isn't a factor, is the blueprint still in place? Can they kind of get around the corner again and get it going close to what they were a few years ago?
Well, based on what this year's offensive line has shown, I don't necessarily think so, but that's not necessarily a bad thing because Stanford has a young quarterback in Tanner McKee, finally took the starting reins in week 2. And at times, you know, especially earlier in the season, you could have made the case that he was the best quarterback in the Pac-12. Super poised, makes good decisions, a bit long and lanky, so he kind of has an elongated throwing motion, but it works. He gets the ball where it needs to be when it needs to get there. So he's got a quarterback and he's got wide receivers, lots of them, when they're all healthy, which has not been the case at all at any point during the course of this season. So, you know, I mean, I've often said this, you know, David Shaw would prefer to win a street fight over a track meet, but he also wouldn't mind having the ability to choose. And this year's team, the way it has performed, is more built to win a track meet than it is to win a street fight. Now, at times we have seen phone booth football where they trot out the extra linemen and things like that, but that's not what Stanford has done best this year. And based on what the strengths of the offense are and where they could likely lie in the next couple of years with McKee, with much of that wide receiver room coming back again next year, I don't necessarily think that's where the strength is going to lie next year. That being said, they haven't been able to run the ball with any consistency when they've needed to. We mentioned Washington and the Washington State when they had chances to just get one first down and they couldn't do it. Stanford's better at throwing the football, But they need to get better at running the ball as well if they want to get back to the levels that they've been experiencing for much of the past decade plus.
Talking Stanford football with Troy Clarity. And I mean, they beat Oregon earlier this year. How did they, for all their issues, how did they beat Oregon? How did they win that game?
I was asking myself that very question walking out of the stadium that afternoon, and I'm still asking that question. And here, look, again, as we talked about earlier in this chat, right, so many things have to fall into place for you to just win a football game. And the biggest domino that had to fall was Oregon being up by a touchdown inside 3 minutes to go, and they threw the football on second down through an incomplete pass. Stop the clock. Stanford eventually got a stop, and that eventually was that eventually gave them the ball back. Got pushed back to their own 4-yard line. Had to overcome, a big pass play. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau gets called for targeting and booted from the drive. That was the only time that his name was ever called throughout the course of that game, by the way. And then going back in tying the game and then winning it in overtime. Now, that was a different Oregon team that day, in that their normal offensive coordinator, who just called a lights-out game against Ohio State a few weeks before, was in the Bay Area, but he was in the hospital that day undergoing emergency surgery. He wasn't feeling that great, so he wasn't with the team. And certainly, I think that affected some things that you saw from Oregon that day. But that being said, Stanford with a big goal line stop, keeping the Oregon Ducks out of it on fourth and goal in the second quarter, that proved huge. And Stanford at that time had the receivers to get the job done. John Humphreys with big catches. Even though Bryson Tremaine got lost during the course of that game with just a gruesome injury, the Stanford offense hasn't been the same since then, by the way. Elijah Higgins with big catches down the stretch as well. So, you know, Stanford able to get things going in the passing game and able to get just enough defense to beat an Oregon squad that looked very different that day than it really has, except for last week at Utah, at any other point in the season. Again, so many things have to fall into place for you to win a football game on this level, and that day those things fell in Stanford's favor.
That was their last win. They've lost six straight since then.
Yep.
Is there anything, you know, where Stanford is right now going into this game this week that, you know, both sides of the ball, either side of the ball, anything that they really can hang their hat on right now?
Well, the fact that they have gotten a bit better in running the ball, which seems a little silly because they're still by far the worst team as far as rushing yardage per game in the Pac-12. But things have progressed a little bit in that area as the season has gone along. And look, that game after Oregon, the very next week, they had to go on a short week on a Friday, get on a plane, and play Arizona State. You showed me the schedule back in the spring and asked me to pick one game that Stanford was least likely to win. It would have been that one. On a short week, after playing Oregon, which is a super physical team, and having to get on a plane and head down to Arizona State, I didn't like Stanford's chances going into that one, and sure enough, they lost, and they haven't found their way back in the win column since. But, you know, I think there's that. They've gotten a bit better in the run game since then. Obviously, with Tanner McKee back after missing the Utah and the Oregon games, that certainly gives Stanford any sort of dimension as far as the passing attack is concerned. But I hate to use this, but it's true, number one, and B, any port in the storm, I guess. Stanford hasn't mailed it in. They haven't quit. Look,
okay.
I mean, it's easy to roll over when you're down by 30, or when you're walking into the locker room and you're down 38-0 at the half, as they were against Utah. Stanford hasn't quit at any point this season. They've still been able to compete, and you can tell, you know, you watch enough football, you can tell when a team has rolled over and when they've stopped competing. That has not been the case for Stanford, even when scores have gotten out of hand of late, and that's been, you know, it's been a thing with them. Talking with Thomas Booker, their fantastic defensive end, you know, he says, "Hey, no checkouts," and that's been perhaps the biggest thing. And I hate to say this, but it's true. I'd love to say, "Hey, man, they've been doing fantastic things. Their red zone is awesome." I can't necessarily say those things, but I can say they're not going to quit. They're not going to punk out, and they're going to keep fighting no matter what the scoreboard says. So there is that.
Yeah, they just played their biggest rival, Cal, last week. Of course, they lost that game. Where does Notre Dame fit in Stanford's rivalry pecking order, I guess?
Boy, that's a good question. And maybe it slipped a little bit in the last couple of years because, look, this is the first time Stanford and Notre Dame have played each other since 2019.
Yeah.
So I think that answer depends a little bit on which generation of Stanford fan you're talking to. The older Stanford fans who remember when Big Game was completely sold out every single year, no matter the venue, the ones who remember 1982, the ones who were there for 1990 when Stanford scored 9 points in the final 12 seconds to beat the Bears, they will tell you hands down that Cal is Stanford's biggest rival. The younger fans, I suspect, will say that USC is Stanford's biggest rival. And maybe put Oregon in second place, because Stanford and Oregon, more often than not, have been battling each other for the Pac-12 North, and those games have often had a big hand in deciding who wins the Pac-12 North one way or the other. Notre Dame's up there in that top three or four, and I think it looks that way no matter which way you want to go. And there is a trophy attached to this, right? The Legends Trophy. So there is that. So yeah, I think Notre Dame ranks up there among Stanford's rivals, certainly in the top four, no matter which generation you want to talk about. Who's number one? Depends on who you're asking.
Troy Clarity from the TreeCast podcast, also play-by-play announcer for the Pac-12. Troy, I hope your smoked turkey comes out well. If it's anything as close to the kind of information that you gave, I'm sure it's going to be delicious. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay sane, and let's do this again soon.
That is Troy Clarity. Glad to talk to him going into Thanksgiving weekend a couple of days ago, and you hear him right there. And again, the host of the TreeCast and also play-by-play at the Pac-12 Network. We'll take a timeout. When Jim Irizarry and I come back, we'll hit a couple of props for Notre Dame's game tomorrow, with kickoff tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. This is the Leprechaun Lunch, presented by First State Bank on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT. Leprechaun Lunch, presented by First State Bank, with Jim Irizarry, Sean Stiers. Our game day coverage starts at 3 tomorrow with the game day show. Tim Ground, Vince D'Addario, 5 o'clock game day sports beat. 7 o'clock, Notre Dame Radio Network's tailgate show. 8 o'clock, Notre Dame and Stanford kickoff. Post-game show, Evan Sharpley and Vince D'Addario will have that, because I'm down here in dreary old Florida with Notre Dame women's basketball. Again, I'll just mention,
I mean, if you'd like me to send you some pictures, I can send you some pictures of what I'm looking at. So
I know, right? Again, no TV for Notre Dame women's game today against Georgia at 4:30, or tomorrow night's game against Oregon State at 7 o'clock. So 99.9 FM, that's where we'll have the call for those, both of those games today and tomorrow. All right, Jim, you got some game props for us in these final few minutes that we have here?
Notre Dame, a 18.5-point favorite going into Stanford. Points scored by Notre Dame this week. This is just Notre Dame team total, okay?
Just Notre Dame? Okay.
36.5, over, under.
Man. I guess I'll go over. I don't have a good feel for Stanford. Maybe it's because we haven't seen them for a couple of years. I guess I'll go over on that one. They scored 55 last week.
All right. Style points do count, by the way, so let's...
Yes, they do.
Let's
yes,
remember that, so...
Yep.
Who will lead the Irish in receiving yards? Mayer, Austin, or someone else?
I'll go Michael Mayer for this game.
Okay.
I think he'll close out strong. Yep, I'll All go right. Michael Mayer.
Which Irish running back will score a touchdown? Kyron Williams, Logan Diggs, both, or neither?
I got to go Kyron Williams for sure. I would think that they're going to get Chris Tyree a little bit more involved in this game. He's, you know, with that turf toe that he had, you know, he's been kind of absent for a little bit. So mm-hmm. I'll say Kyron Williams for sure. Not sure about Logan Diggs.
Okay. More pass yards than rushing yards, or more rushing yards than pass yards?
I'll go rushing yards. I like that.
More rushing than passing?
I'll go rushing yards.
All right.
Yeah.
That's just for Notre Dame, by the way, so...
Right.
And then let's see. Total yards. against Stanford. The over-under there set 399.5.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's so low, considering Stanford does not have a very good... You know, Notre Dame was over 500 yards of total offense again last week. So, I'm going to say they're in the 400s for sure.
All right. And then passing touchdowns for Jack Cohn. Over-under set at 2.5.
I'll go under, because he still only had 2 last week. I think probably more rushing than passing tomorrow. So,
all right. And then
I'll go under 2.5.
Of course, Ohio State, Michigan, that is tomorrow as well. Ohio State, 8.5-point favorite on the road. Over-under there set at 64.5.
Man. I'm going to go under.
Going under, okay.
How about you?
If I do some math in my head,
you don't have much time. We got about 15 seconds.
They whipped up on Michigan State pretty good. I could actually see that going over.
Okay,
it'll be like a 49-20 sort of deal, but it'll be I could see that going over. So,
yep. All right. Well, Jim, have a good rest of your weekend.
You
for
do the
Jim,
same.
I'm Sean. Leprechaun Lunch presented by First State Bank on Sports Radio 960 WSBT South Bend.